I'm Cass Harrington, and here are your local and regional headlines. The release of iStep results means that teachers will finally get their evaluation for this past school year. Evansville-Vanderburgh School Corporation saw an increase in students passing both the math and English sections of the spring exam. In the data released by the Indiana Department of Education Wednesday, 64.8% of EVSC students in grades 3 through 8 passed both sections. That's up nearly 5 percentage points from 2012. An Indiana State Police trooper explained the state of methamphetamine usage at a House subcommittee meeting Wednesday, chaired by Indiana Representative Larry Bouchon. First Sergeant Nikki Crawford told the congressman that there has been an emergence of, quote, one-pot or shake-and-bake meth labs, which use plastic 2-liter bottles or glass jars, and which can be easily set up anywhere to make small quantities of the drug. This has made detection of the drug more difficult. More information on methamphetamine usage will run in Sunday's Courier and Press. Mayor Lloyd Winicky is scheduled to be among the crew members of the LST for the final leg of its trip back to Evansville. The decommissioned Navy ship is expected to arrive around noon on Monday, and it will make an appearance in front of Dress Plaza before docking at Marina Point. The LST's 10-year agreement to moor in Evansville expires in May 2015. There have been several negotiations on a new deal, and Winicky said those have been a beat, but other communities also covet the World War II-era vessel. And once that ship docks, Winicky will have a major city council meeting to prepare for. 6 of the 9 city council members have announced opposition to the hotel convention plan, citing concerns about overcommitting funds that would compromise the development of an Indiana University Medical School campus. Winicky says the city has the financial capability to do both. City Council will vote at its meeting on Monday. Folk lovers unite at the Ferdinand Folk Festival in DuBois County on Saturday. The free all-day event is located in Ferdinand's 18th Street Park. Nationally acclaimed musicians will share the stage with local and regional acts, and local artists and artisans will set up booths to display and sell their work, alongside gardeners and farmers selling produce. That's your local and regional news. Stay tuned for the trend. Support for the trend comes from members of the Local Programming Fund. I'm your host, Cass Harrington. We're only 2 weeks away from the October 1st opening of health insurance exchanges. Reuters has likened this impending marketplace to Black Friday, a shopping day to remember. To help walk us through this new process, I'm joined by Kevin Valadares, the director of the Health Administration Program at the University of Southern Indiana. So how exactly has the Affordable Care Act affected your work and how you explain healthcare to your students?
Well, I first of all, thanks to Obamacare, I'm pretty sure I have a job for life, and which is a really great thing for me. But it is, without a doubt, the single most important development in our healthcare system in the last 40-something years since the passage of Medicare in 1965. This will affect every part of healthcare, some entities and people more than others. But the primary driver behind the Affordable Care Act, which is actually the real term of Obamacare, but Obamacare sounds cooler and he likes it anyway, is about patient access, giving people access to health insurance. And that's a really important thing because usually when we talk about the healthcare system, the U.S. healthcare system, we talk about what's called a three-legged stool, the cost of healthcare, the quality of healthcare, and folks getting access to healthcare. And so this is really only about one of those legs, access to healthcare insurance. Really doesn't tackle cost, although there are some parameters in it.
And quality.
Or quality as much. The focus is on access. And so the analogy that I give to folks, Cass, is if you picture a football field, and in order to make sure that the team is doing well and individuals are doing well in playing football, you got to have everyone on the field. But right now in our healthcare system, we have some people who are on the playing field, we have some people who are in the stands, and we have a lot of people who are in the parking lot. They can't even get into the field. So what the primary driver behind Obamacare is to get everyone on the field. Because then you can think about quality and cost. You have to have everyone in the game first.
It's an interesting analogy. Did you come up with that on your own?
I did as I was watching, you know, football. But I think it sort of makes sense. It's what I try and talk to our students at USI about, because it's a complicated issue, and there's lots of parameters. And the last few years, there's been so much back and forth, up and down, agreement, disagreement, and lots of political maneuvering. Mm-hmm. That it's and lots of feelings, and those feelings are warranted, because this affects our health, right, and the health of our kids and our parents. And so it's very personal to everybody. And so it should be passionate.
Which is why I want to add that House Republicans want to defund Obamacare. And I thought, for the sake of the listeners, I would focus this show on exactly what we can expect, because it's going to happen more likely than not.
Right. Because it's actually, the plane has already taken off.
Yeah.
Right. So it's in the air. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a number of items within the Affordable Care Act that have already started. It's not going to stop. There will be changes along the way, but probably the biggest provision starts very soon.
And that's as soon as October 1st. What's happening then?
On October 1st is when the state health insurance marketplaces open up.
For the record, it's our listeners are from three states here.
Yeah.
Kentucky has chosen a state exchange.
Right.
Illinois is a state-federal partnership.
Correct.
And then Indiana is on the federal exchange.
That's correct. It's on the federal exchange. So it's all over the place. And the states have had the choice over the last number of months, actually beyond that, to decide what to do. Some states, like Oregon and California, have already leaked information out in terms of how it's going to work, how people will be able to sign up officially. The primary example of how this works is the state of Massachusetts, because they developed a health insurance exchange in their state. And so you can literally go right now today on the state of Massachusetts healthcare exchange, and you can look at different plans. So what individual will be able to do is get access to prices and insurance products.
So what exactly is a state exchange?
A state exchange is essentially a group of private insurance companies who have who are putting their plans in a mix, and then individuals can choose from those plans. And they're going to be classified just like Olympic medals, gold, silver, and bronze.
They got creative there.
It's very creative. What can I say? So gold has the most amount or the of benefits, but it's also the costliest in terms of monthly premium. And then silver is next, and bronze is third. And so depending on where you live, your gender, your age, if you're looking for yourself, a spouse, a family members, there will be choices available. And this is the main word to use with the marketplace, choices. It's what makes our U.S. healthcare system unique compared to a more socialized system. Certainly in Europe and Canada and other parts of the world, in their national healthcare system, there are choices. But this is primarily driven by choices, and this is what the state exchange is going to be doing. So what it does is it gives individuals the ability to choose health insurance products. That hasn't been done before.
Essentially, shopping is how they're describing it.
It is all about shopping.
You're listening to The Trend on 88.3 WNIN. Support for the program today comes from Rabin Tire and Auto Service, a proud sponsor of WNIN programming. Rabin offers a selection of tire brands, including Michelin and Goodyear, along with the complete auto service and recommended maintenance by trained technicians. Information on the web at RabinTire.com. And we're back on The Trend. I'm Cass Harrington, and today the Affordable Care Act is on the examining table. I'm talking to the director of the Health Administration Program at USI, Kevin Valadares. And looking ahead, after these exchanges or marketplaces open, then what can we expect?
So a big part of what's going to happen is the federal government, Department of Health and Human Services, has enacted what's called patient navigators. Lots of different people who are supposed to help individuals make these choices appropriately. Not choose for them, but help make the choices and inform choices. And because on January 1st of 2014, that's when the mandate, the key word, that's when people have to have insurance. All of us have to have insurance. Mm-hmm. Now, I say all of us, there's going to be a lot of caveats there, especially with states' Medicaid programs, but the marketplace choices will start October 1st.
Well, and going back to your football analogy.
Yes.
When you have everyone on the field and everyone is insured. Mm-hmm. I mean, what does it do to that, to the risk pool? Are more people going to have to pay more? Or, you know, I guess if I'm talking about who's uninsured now in say, Indiana, what's that going to do to the rest of us?
Great. Good question. And you're using a key term, the risk pool, because insurance is about risk and trying to minimize risk. With more people in the insurance market, it absolutely minimizes risk. Now, one of the...
Really? How?
How? Because what happens... It's a good question. It balances the playing field. Because right now, if you think about private insurance, this is how private insurance works. You have lots of different people in an insurance pool. So you'll have a 16-year-old boy and a 40-year-old woman and an 80-year-old man. And they all have different health experiences. And we know that from how they use the healthcare system. But generally, healthier people do not use healthcare. So that's a win for the insurance company. That's how insurance companies make money, when people don't use healthcare, because the premiums are being paid in, but there are no costs coming out to providers, to hospitals, to clinics or dentist offices. So if you have lots of people in, it balances the playing field. So you have someone who uses a lot of healthcare, whether they're sick or not. Right now, that's a costly individual for an insurance company. But the idea is that you will balance that with healthier individuals. Right now, there's a large group of individuals who are uninsured, but they're healthy.
Almost 900,000 in Indiana.
Right, right. But they're healthy. Uh-huh. Now, there's a large, also another portion who are uninsured today who are not healthy, and they will be joining the health insurance marketplace. So one of the issues, which is absolutely an issue to see how it unfolds, is will the health insurance marketplaces be flooded with sicker individuals? Mm-hmm. Because they couldn't get access to health insurance before. They were trying to survive, and by going to the emergency department. And the answer to that question is yes, of course. Mm-hmm. If you're uninsured right now and you or your kid needs insurance, you're going to join the exchange.
And what about those who are insured through, say, an employer? Is it likely that premiums will go up?
In the short term, yes, it will. In the long term, those should balance out. I'm not going to say go down, because quite honestly, insurance premiums will not go down, but they will balance out. They will even out. However, what also happens is this. It minimizes the notion of an insurance exchange, minimizes the risk that your insurance is also tied to your job. Because right now, we have an employer-based healthcare system. So it's great. I work at the University of Southern Indiana, and the University of Southern Indiana provides health insurance options to myself and my family. But if I lose my job, I lose my health insurance, so do my kids. And the insurance marketplace evens that out in a great way. And so what happens when, and that's a major change to our current system.
And that's also if you don't like the one that your employer provides, right?
If it doesn't work for you in terms of cost or benefits, then you will have the option. Because right now that option doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. But you'll have an option to move, and those options will evolve over time. It's a great deal for individuals who perhaps no fault of their own use health insurance because they have a chronic illness, because their costs and coverage level will be evened out.
And say for someone who is generally healthy, like Me, I'm in pretty good shape. How will this affect what I pay?
For someone who is healthier, who is healthy for the long term, premiums are going to go up. And that is the cost associated to the individuals. But that's what happens when you let everyone on the field.
Well, you, a lot of your research and presentations, they focus on, quote, one is the slippery slope of market-driven healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of approaching healthcare as a good and service? Is that reasonable?
Yeah, great. It's the reality of what we see here in the United States, and it is very different as we compare the United States to other countries. Oftentimes, Cass, the U.S. is compared to the rest of the world in terms of how much money we spend on healthcare, and sometimes how poor our outcomes are. How can we spend so much money per individual, per capita, on healthcare compared to a country like Switzerland or Germany or Japan, but we have a higher obesity rate, or we have more folks with cancer? Shouldn't we, if we're spending so much money, shouldn't we have licked some of those problems? Part of it is the uniqueness of our healthcare system is based on the marketplace, and it started off in the 1920s and 1930s with employers offering health insurance. That is a very American concept, and it was done for a very great reason. I mean, employers wanted to keep people employed and wanted to keep them happy. And that's what Henry Ford did with the Ford Motor Company. He wanted to keep his employees happy and their families happy. So he said, I'm going to provide health care coverage to them and other employers. It was a great way to recruit and retain employees. And well, that's the history of it.
It's interesting that you would say it's a very American concept by the arguments against it would say otherwise.
Yeah, it is. And it makes a lot of sense for employers. Now, employers, you know, are also the ones right now are screaming because the cost of healthcare for them is incredibly high. Unfortunately, it's caused some employers to drop their healthcare coverage. Mm-hmm. And when you drop it,
UPS here.
Right. They've made changes saying if your spouse has health insurance, you have to get on that or you're going to pay a penalty. But there's also laws set up that employers who employ part-time employees don't have to provide health care insurance. And that's how companies like Walmart or even a small hairdresser or a restaurant doesn't provide health insurance to its employees. And yet people work there.
And there are some people working part-time jobs who simply can't.
Individuals who have lower incomes, who meet federal poverty guidelines, are certainly eligible for perhaps Medicaid, that's depending on the state where they live in. But there's a large chunk of individuals, Cass, who are working full-time, maybe 2-3 part-time jobs, who do not qualify for Medicaid in their states. But because they work part-time jobs, they certainly don't qualify for the health insurance through their employers. This is the individuals that the state health exchanges are meant for. Mm-hmm. The question is, again, even at the bronze level, can they afford it? Because at some point, everyone has to decide, and they decide very quickly, I can afford health insurance, it's valuable to me and my family, or I have to pay the rent, I have to buy groceries, I have to do certain things. You know, my car is broken down, I have to pay for that. I cannot afford health insurance. Mm-hmm. These are legitimate reasons.
And there's concern that there's going to be more people like this, because employers might, or the fear is that employers might offer more part-time positions than full-time.
Yeah, I don't think it's so much a fear. I think it's a reality that's going to happen. I mean, you know, if you look at it from an employer's perspective, it's a good business decision to say, look, my primary mission as an employer is not to pay for health insurance. It's a byproduct.
You're listening to The Trend. We're going to shift gears for a few minutes and play an interview I had with Andrew Rosenberg. He's the office business leader for the health and benefits team at Mercer in Indianapolis. Mercer is a global consulting firm that explains benefit options like private exchanges to employers and employees. And one of the ways that you're doing that is through a lot of kind of communication toolkits for employers. Can you talk briefly about that?
When it comes to communications for the Affordable Care Act, the question essentially becomes, how do you take something that's really complex that ultimately takes a team of attorneys and consultants to sift through, and how do you make that as simple as possible for your employees to understand? So we essentially developed a website that makes it as simple as possible for employees to get some basic information about what healthcare reform is and what it means for them.
Well, I thought it was interesting that essentially that there is money to be made off of communicating this weighty topic. I mean, I don't know if that's a testament to just how confused people are, or, you know, maybe the president's communication department could be doing a better job.
I think it ties back to something I mentioned earlier, the fact that we have employers representing 2 million employees around the country that find value in subscribing to a healthcare reform made simple website on behalf of their employees certainly speaks volumes about the complication and the confusion around healthcare reform.
And so how does Mercer's private exchange, how does it differ than the government-run exchanges?
Sure, absolutely. The private exchange essentially is an option for employers that want to continue to offer benefits to their employees and maintain control over those programs. And so it's still an employer-sponsored benefit plan. And the concept of Mercer Marketplace, which is our proprietary private exchange, is that we're trying to work with employers to provide them an option to reduce costs, simplify administration, and ultimately empower their employees.
And how does it empower employees?
The private benefit exchange concept is built on, at least in part, and I think we're anticipating that many employers will offer a private benefit exchange with a defined contribution concept. So what do we mean by defined contribution? Basically, the employer is going to define how much they're going to contribute towards their employees' health benefits on a monthly basis. And so you can almost think of it as if you were shopping online, and you can kind of picture your shopping cart in the top right-hand corner of your website, and you can imagine Acme Company's contribution of X hundred dollars per month.
UPS has been taking off spouse benefits to its employees locally, Terre Haute. Are there other insights that Mercer has been able to see in future outcomes for how this might have an effect on employees, and whether an employer might take full-time staff and make it more part-time and change that dynamic around?
Well, there are a couple of questions there. The first, you mentioned that the UPS and the fact that they're moving forward with a spousal carve-out, which essentially means no spouses that have medical coverage available through their own employer are no longer able to access through their spouse on the UPS plans. The fact of the matter is that really most of our clients around Indiana are considering adding a surcharge for the first time, or increasing that surcharge or carving out altogether like UPS did if they've already had that surcharge for years. So they're continuing down that progression. And Indiana in particular has actually been in front of that trend, with about 30% of employers with more than 500 employees already including a spousal provision. And so it's certainly not something that every employer is going to do, and they may not do it next year, they may not do it for several years. In Evansville in particular, the numbers even jump up a little bit higher. In our most recent survey, data from 2012 suggested that in the Evansville area, 40% of employers that responded to our survey had a spousal provision of one sort or another.
So having younger folks in the risk pool, if you will, who tend to be healthier, does that bring costs down, or is someone else benefiting because of that?
Some of this remains to be seen. But I think to what you're speaking about, the individual mandate requiring us as Americans essentially to have medical coverage or pay a penalty as we move forward, we certainly may see some of those that would historically have gone uninsured decide that they will purchase medical coverage for the first time, and that may well include some younger folks. On the flip side of the coin, though, other components of the legislation are requiring insurers to accept individuals that have, you know, illnesses, pre-existing conditions, et cetera, and to provide them coverage that is, you know, could be very expensive for the insurer. And so those two pieces go hand in hand. And it's a key component of the individual mandate and why that will likely continue to move forward on January 1st, 2014.
That was Andrew Rosenberg, the office business leader for the health and benefits team at Mercer in Indianapolis. Later on, we'll hear the Obamacare blues and a few concerns from the doctor who's singing them. Now back to the rest of my conversation with Kevin Valadares. He's the director of the Health Administration Program at USI. What is the side effect going to be on hospitals with this influx of sick patients?
Sure.
Are doctors going to be more spread out, and even are our medical schools prepared for that?
It's a great, this is actually the area that I spend most of my time thinking about, talking about, and talking to students about. What's the effect on our healthcare system, essentially our providers, our hospitals, our clinics, everything? This is where a lot of healthcare systems are changing their way that they are delivering care to include a lot more primary care. This is part of the reason why hospitals across the country are starting to employ a lot more physicians. Mm-hmm. A lot of those physicians are primary care providers. So they can control, in a sense, how primary care is delivered and how it then is extended to specialty care as well. But primary care providers are going to be winners. And I would say the opposite, that specialist physicians, they're going to, in a sense, lose more.
In terms of salary, are primary care physicians going to get paid more?
That's going to be up to every entity, but as it paid more than they are now, probably yes. But that also means that there's going to be somewhat of a curb with specialist physicians. I mean, that's already been happening. Mm-hmm. But certainly the emphasis here is on more primary care than specialty care. I think about nurse practitioners as being a primary driver here, maybe being certainly in the future, depending on the state, but I would sort of say nurse practitioners will take a major lead, if not the lead, in being the primary care provider that you and I will have in 20 years.
Because there's, at this point, not quite enough doctors.
There's nowhere near enough primary care physicians. And so there's been an addition of about 5 or 6 medical schools around the country, some that have absolutely emphasized primary care as an area. But they're still not going to be as enough. Certainly at the same time as we're looking at an increasingly older population who will need care at the same time just because they're living longer. Mm-hmm. So we just don't have enough doctors, period, across the country.
So would this translate into longer waits at the doctor's office?
Now, I will tell you, on January 1st, 2014, I'm pretty sure that all 33 million Americans won't be rushing to a hospital or doctor's office. That won't happen. However, they will inquire about seeking health care. But I think it's important to understand this, that Obamacare is about access to health insurance. Doesn't mean you have access to health care. So it's no different than now. Just because you have the insurance card doesn't mean you're going to get the appointment. What it will do, though, is it will create waiting times. Now, waiting times occurs right now. One might say, in fact, everybody listening to this has waited for healthcare, with, let's say, in an emergency department, a doctor's office, a specialist eye doctor appointment, something like that. For certain areas, those might increase, but the effect is certainly there are ways, and our healthcare system has been responding to this for years, to figure out how to change its practices, how to become more efficient. Mm-hmm. Because a group of doctors and nurses aren't going to be appearing out of the trees and saying, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to take care of you. So it's not so much about, do we need more doctors? We certainly do in certain areas, certainly in primary care, but how are we using our healthcare providers right now, and might that change?
Well, let's talk about who's benefiting, who's in their eyes are losing.
Okay.
Going case by case. We have a 26-year-old on staff here. She's on her parents' insurance. What's the implication for her?
One of the very first provisions of Obamacare was to extend young people, so I say young between 23 and 26, the ability for them to stay on their parents' insurance. And that has benefited, it's almost 3 million younger folks across the country, which means 3 million people are insured right now, and a few years ago they weren't. That's a good thing.
And most people agreed with this.
Yeah, but it's also a group that tends not to use healthcare a lot. So it's somewhat of a no-brainer. They don't go to the doctor. They're usually healthy. So insurance companies love them. Mm-hmm. They love them. But as soon as she turns 27, it's going to be an issue. She has to find healthcare, health insurance, I'm sorry. And so a state exchange or through a spouse's insurance is the only thing that she can do unless she's eligible for the Medicaid program. But a mandate is a mandate, which means on January 1st, everyone's got to have health insurance or they're going to pay a penalty. Now, quite honestly, the penalties for individuals...
They start pretty low.
Mm-hmm. They will increase. Mm-hmm. They will increase and they will become somewhat substantial. It depends on your income. I think there was a lot of posturing when the Affordable Care Act was going through the political process that, you know, people, if the penalties aren't severe enough, people are just going to say, I'm not going to get health insurance. But the reality is this, people would rather have health insurance than pay a fine because an accident could happen. Today, it doesn't matter if you're young and healthy. Young people eventually mature, and certainly if, let's say, they get married or have a child, they want to absolutely have health insurance because it's not about them anymore. It's about the family.
So back to my question, who do you think benefits the most from the Affordable Care Act? Obviously, the health insurance companies, but in terms of people?
I would say the biggest winner here is obviously people who are uninsured right now. Uninsured, underinsured, and they get access to it. I mean, that was what this was for. They get the card. And the fact is you got the card, you're on the field. Doesn't mean that you're going to get in to see a doctor or nurse right away, but at least you're in the system. And that was the whole driver behind this. Doesn't include everybody. But that's the biggest winner. And you're going to have, over time, tweaks and balances through this. Every state is going to really make its own changes as opposed to a nationwide change. I don't envision anything as large as Obamacare happening for another 40 years again. It was, you know, as you know, and a lot of the listeners know, it was a major political issue, and it was painful for everybody.
I think we'd have a heart attack if there was another big change.
There you go. Exactly. So,
but at least we'd have a system to prepare for that.
Well, I hope so. But they're absolutely, you know, the biggest winner are people who don't have insurance right now. One last group that I failed to mention, Cass, that will be the absolute winner in this are insurance companies. I mean, more people are joining insurance companies through the exchanges. They're winning. I mean, it's a huge deal for them because the more people that join, the more premiums they get. So the challenge is managing them and then seeing where they come out in terms of preventive care.
So, Kevin, in terms of what you're saying, how it will affect people, it's still fairly hypothetical.
Everything that I'm sort of spilling out here and lots of other people around the country, you know, we're just taking guesses right now because it hasn't started yet. But we will know a year from now. 2 years from now, the reality. So it will be a lot less hypothetical and a lot more reality. But this, because employers, insurance exchanges, individuals will react. Everyone will react. So it's our best guess.
Wow. Is there anything that's very unclear to you at this point?
lots of things are unclear. One of the, I think one of the most important things, or at least for me, is this is not really so much a nationwide thing. This is really done being done by every state individually. So every state has to run its health insurance exchange and its Medicaid program. And every state is going to have to approach this differently because of state reality. So if you look in the last 5 years where every state has been hit by the downturn in the economy, and they've had to make some serious choices, and they have. They've cut access to social programs, education, healthcare, because in every state, education and healthcare are the biggest costs. I mean, period. Mm-hmm. That's it. We know it right now. With more people coming into the different exchanges or the Medicaid program and therefore using it, and perhaps less people working, that creates a problem for the states. So I think the question that I have the most is it's not going to be uniform. California is going to look very different than Indiana, and it already does in a lot of ways, but in terms of how it handles this, because it becomes a state issue. And who the legislators are and who the governors is really, really going to matter. Mm-hmm. And so it actually becomes irrelevant who the president and who the Congress is in a lot of ways. It's within that state. In fact, the state legislators are going to be the most important drivers of this, or they might change parameters. Much more so than any president or member of Congress or Senate could. So that is, it's the total model I have, because we all live in different states.
So Obamacare should be recoined as Senator Care, Governor Care.
There you go. But that's what really will matter, because it becomes, and it fits with the idea that healthcare is always local, and it works in Massachusetts.
And now, so Romney's program is essentially the model for this?
Yeah, it is the model. It gives people choices, but they have to take responsibility for it, which is a little bit different than how it exists right now.
Hmm. Keyword, responsibility.
Yeah.
Well, Kevin, the plane is in flight. It's going to be a bumpy ride, so I might pull you on again.
Sure, no problem. As long as there's cocktails on the plane, I'm coming.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay.
I do like Bloody Marys. Thank you, Kevin.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
That was Kevin Valadares. He's a professor and the director of the Health Administration Program at the University of Southern Indiana. We've reached our final segment on today's conversation about the Affordable Care Act. I'm joined by Dr. Wayne Liebert, an urgent care physician in Prior Lake, Minnesota, who has written about healthcare in his book, Elephants in the Exam Room, Seven Things You Should Know About Today's Healthcare Crisis. And he's also written a song called The Obamacare Blues, one of the reasons why I'm talking with him today.
If we don't do anything, we'll see what this brings. Watch a doctor be a puppet pulled by government strings. Obamacare.
And you're also a guitarist?
Right. I've been playing in bands actually since I was 13, but I'm still playing in a working rock band called Solid Gold Band.
And is Solid Gold Band, are they all doctors?
No. for the music video, we were all dressed up as physicians, but I'm actually the only one that's an actual physician.
Because the fact that you are wearing scrubs really lends to the significance. Because, you know, some doctors are in favor of Obamacare and others are staunchly against it. And I think it's your decision to sing about it, sing the blues literally, is an interesting way to convey your dissatisfaction.
Right, right. No, and actually, one of the songs in the album that we had done, which is called Here in Flyover Country, it's an album about life in the Midwest, basically, was called The Small Town Blues. And I thought, boy, this would be great to just adapt this into the Obamacare Blues, which is actually the song that came out of it that then we ended up doing the video with.
The introduction to the video, you know, you and each of your band members takes turns resuscitating one another with defibrillators.
Well, actually, I'm the rock and roll 360 defibrillator, if you look closely.
Yeah, that's right. I did catch that. It's kind of creepy. Is that the intention?
It is creepy. Well, but this is what it's like. So the fairly funny story about this is, so we're filming this late into the night in this operating room when we cleaned everything up, and I left and I thought, I better take one more look, you know, because this defibrillator was to be used the next day. So I go back and I take one more look, and the rock and roll 360 sign was still on the defibrillator.
Oh,
thinking, boy, the next day if they use this to defibrillate someone, it's going to be a little shock, so to speak.
Can you imagine someone coming to and seeing that and being like, where am I?
So we cleaned up well. No, I come in as the alive person, and the band members are all dead. And so they all have already been made up in white face, basically dead makeup. And if you'll notice, there's toe tags on each, and it basically the case type is Obamacare. You know, so basically the inference here is that they've been killed by Obamacare. So I use the rock and roll 360 defibrillator to shock them back to life one at a time. Because as soon as we shocked everyone, you know, we had heartbeats. And then, of course, as everyone goes back to their gurney and lies down and dies again, their heartbeats go away. And then I, as the last person lying down, my heartbeat, you know, goes away too, you know, after I've been hit with Obamacare, the prescription Obamacare. And then, and that's the end of it, so.
Did you have, I mean, was this purely just for creative reasons, or did you hope, it would start a conversation?
Oh, I think it was both. You know, it's the creative part was fun. I'm a creative person, and, you know, it kind of nicely for me really working urgent care the last 8 years. I was working 70, 80 hours a week sometimes in family practice. So I was doing hospital work and clinic work and delivering babies. And, you know, I was writing some all during that time. But since I've been out doing urgent care, I have more time, so I've written, you know, a couple of books and recording albums and things now that I wrote. And the creative thing was important, just to do it from that standpoint. There was a message, obviously, here too, and I thought the message would come across pretty well doing it this way. I think, as, you know, as an art form, I think music videos are really very interesting. You know, because you can do so much with them. I mean, they can just be pure glitz and glam, or they can be something that says something.
And your perspective and your opinion of Obamacare, does it come from a place of what you see and experience in the hospital, or is it a values thing? What's shaping your perspective?
I think it's a lot based on what I've seen over the years, and I think, you know, the Elephants in the Exam Room book that I've written actually goes way back to the beginning of my practice and talks about that. It talks about things that I experienced directly in practice. You know, there's all these questions patients would ask, and the chapters were written sort of based on that. Number two, why does healthcare cost so much? Number three, why do we pay so much for drugs? So all of this and my opinions on things are largely based on the angst I've seen from patients and the questions and the concerns they have, but the things that I've seen myself over the years. And one of the things I really am concerned about looking at this is that no one is taking a really big picture look at this. And, you know, so, you know, the subtitle of the book is The Big Picture Solution to Today's Healthcare Crisis. Everyone has their little carve-out, you know, that they're looking at. And I think from my standpoint, it's more the big picture look. So some of it's values-based. A lot of it is, you know, getting into practice and going, my God, why are these things happening? And why is not anyone looking at this and saying, these are things we need to do. I, in the book especially, I nail everyone. This isn't, you know, your physicians get chastised, your congressmen, the insurance industry, drug companies, lawyers, everyone has a role in this. So I think it's a big picture look. A lot of it is based on experience. And I think a lot of it is based on values, too.
What are your concerns about
The biggest concern I have is that there's no real reform in it. It's a great large expansion of care to millions of people without necessarily a payment mechanism for that. But there's no real cost reform. There's no tort reform. You know, we haven't done anything to to limit the insurance industry's ability to just drive forward and do whatever it wants to do. And, you know, I think we need to really move away from employer-based health care, or at least figure out how to get the money from employers into the hands of employees so they can buy their own types of plans that fit them best. So I'm a proponent of high deductible plans and HSAs, and actually reforming healthcare to where we look at it and say, okay, what is healthcare? We've never defined really what insurance is and what healthcare is versus what I call health maintenance. So health maintenance is doing things like joint replacements and gastric bypasses and smoking cessation and things, you know, that we never paid for before that maintain perhaps your quality of life, but don't necessarily deal with what we used to directly call healthcare, which is delivering your baby and setting your fracture and treating your pneumonia. So we're spending all kinds of money on things, you know, that make our healthcare incredibly expensive, and then wonder why it is that expensive. And none of these things have been dealt with in the whole Obamacare legislation.
Hmm. Yeah, it's primarily just its access to the insurance coverage, not the quality.
Well, and then the quality thing is always an interesting discussion to me, too, because, mm-hmm. you know, what's never mentioned in any of this that concerns me as a physician is patient responsibility and in the whole setup. You know, we, and this is what my book goes into, talking about the fact that, you know, there's basically, of the seven leading causes of death, the majority are chronic diseases which share four root causes, which are smoking, hazardous drinking, inactivity, and poor nutrition. And these are things that really are things that individuals should figure out how to deal with and should be responsible for. But instead, we keep chasing bad behavior. You know, so we spend twice as much per person as other industrialized nations do. You know, we spend 30% of all of our health care and 1% of our population. Two-thirds of our population is overweight, and we spend about 36% more per individual on overweight people than a normal weight people. It just goes and goes and goes.
So would you have liked to see more emphasis on preventative care included in the mandate?
Well, yes and no. I think preventative care is important, but I think that, you know, we've been doing this for a long time. Preventative care has been part of health care plans for a long time, and I don't think necessarily that it's panned out because people have known about it, and despite that, they're really not living healthy lifestyles. I just don't see that it's panned out to this point yet. We need to make people really come face-to-face with what the costs of health care are. And there's things, I mean, our problem isn't that we have a bad system. It's who we spend the money on and how we deliver care. We don't have a bad system. The crisis is how we deliver the care and who we spend the money on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's all sorts of things tied into this. But back to the main issue, I don't think Obamacare, quote-unquote, necessarily looks at any of these real issues. So, you know, the music video was sort of was a shot at that, you know, talking about your doctor being a puppet pulled by government strings. And,
yeah, I wrote that lyric down, doctor being a puppet. That's interesting.
A puppet pulled by government strings. It was a lot of fun to do that. I've always loved playing the blues anyway, but it was intended to be a little funny and a little satirical and, you know, and a little bit of an advertisement.
Was it risky?
Doing it?
Yeah.
How do you mean?
Well, my experience, which was also, it was like, I hate the expression, kill two birds with one stone, but literally talking to you as a musician and a doctor was killing two birds with one stone. I had made attempts at contacting several doctors locally, several people at hospitals to get that, you know, in the clinic perspective, and nobody really wanted to talk, and I didn't know if there was just trepidation, they're waiting until October 1st to talk. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know. I think, you know, some of them maybe work for large healthcare conglomerates and are concerned about, you know, what they say, perhaps, based on that. You know, it depends on who you ran into also. And, I, you know, maybe people aren't incredibly as well informed to sit down and talk a lot, you know, about this. Like I said, I've been writing and speaking for 20 years and written for periodicals and written a couple of books, and you know, I've always been enmeshed in this because I think it's important to be informed as a physician for yourself and for your patients. But there's a lot of things that, you know, part of what I've done, it may be the video and the writing books, and has been catharsis too, because it's really difficult to be in the midst of this and looking at things that are really angst, you know, producing. Physicians are sometimes feeling trapped and put upon because we're being told that we're not providing quality care when we are, but the other half of the equation, which is, you know, patient responsibility and patient action, you know, is undermining that. And I don't know if that's what's keeping people from talking about it. I know that there are a lot of frustrated physicians for a lot of reasons, and this whole pay for performance thing that's, you know, out, that's tied into this now, you know, is the same thing. I can't follow you home and tie you up and keep you out of the refrigerator, but the insurance industry thinks I can. Mm. And I don't know, again, I don't know if that's what's keeping people from talking, or, you know, the Obamacare thing is so complex, and there's so much change going on all the time that, you know, you pretty much have to be absolutely on top of it to be able to say anything meaningful about it. So maybe that's part of it.
Well, to wrap things up, we're going back to your music video, the Obamacare Blues.
Because we keep pouring money in a bottomless cup, Obamacare. Let it treat you if you dare. Obamacare, we don't need it anywhere. We'll all get left with nothing, but they'll tell us that it's fair.
And what was the reaction like?
Oh, it's been interesting. I think it's been mostly good. I think, you know, we've gotten positive comments just, you know, on the video. It's interesting, too, because, you know, I've been writing for years, 20-some years. I've written two books in the last few years. And I go around and do a lot of lecturing and book signing and various things and talk to a number of physicians. And physicians are more split than I thought they would be, actually, you know, on the whole topic of you know, of government-controlled health care. The Obamacare, the whole idea is, it's also split more than I would believe. There are, as you mentioned, a number of physicians for and a number of physicians against, so.
Well, thank you, Wayne. So you're singing the blues about Obamacare. can we expect a sequel as this moves along?
Well, that would be interesting. I'm working on another album right now. I haven't thought about a sequel to this, which would be interesting.
That was Wayne Liebert, an urgent care physician and blues singer in Prior Lake, Minnesota.
Well, I'll get left with nothing, but they'll tell us that it's fair.
That was Obamacare Blues, performed by the Solid Gold Band. And I'm Cass Harrington. In 2 weeks, millions of uninsured Americans will go online to compare health insurance plans, find out if they are eligible for federal help in paying the premiums, and buy coverage. We will update this story as it moves along and keep you informed. Tweet us at our handle, TheTrendTalks. We're also on Facebook and Tumblr, where you can find photos and extra content from the interviews on today's show. Tune in next week for a special segment about what Native American heritage means to modern-day Native Americans. If you want more information about a person or project mentioned on today's program, visit the Trends page at WNIN.org. There you can find the list of songs I played on today's show. Thanks for listening. The Trend is a production of WNIN in collaboration with the Evansville Courier and Press. This episode was produced by myself, with help from Ryan Reynolds at the Courier and Press. Tony Voss provides production support, and the theme music was written by the talented Jeffrey Osman. I'm Cass Harrington. This is WNIN-FM, Evansville, Henderson, and Owensboro.